Welcome to the Menopause Conversations podcast. My name's Angela Council, and I am your host for this podcast. And this is where you learn all about menopause, what is happening to your body, to your hormones, and life in general. Everything is changing, and sometimes it can seem really, really confusing. But this is where the confusion stops right now. This podcast will share with you everything you need to know about how you can navigate your menopause transition with ease. So sit back and enjoy the show. Bye for now. Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of Menopause Conversations podcast. And this episode is a little bit of a carry on from last week when I spoke about phytoestrogens. But this week I'm going to talk about a specific phytoestrogen that there's always a big discussion around, and that is soy. Should I eat soy? Is it good for me? Is it bad for me? That's what I'm kind of going to go in today. And the answer to the question is it good for me? Yes, but. There's a big but there, and I'm going to go into that today. I'm going to talk about, I'll cover off phytoestrogens a little bit again, and particularly when we talk about the soy side of things. The benefits of soy, particularly as you're going through your menopause transition and beyond, the risks and things we need to consider when it comes to consuming soy, quality, and that makes a big difference, quality, and I'm going to be talking about that. And I'm also going to be talking about the nutritional aspect of soy as well. So let's get started. Last week, as I spoke about phytoestrogens, and phytoestrogens are relatively weak, or they're phytochemicals. They're chemicals that are found in plant foods, which have a relatively weak estrogenic-like effect on our cells. So they're not actually estrogen, but they bind to the cells, to the estrogen receptors in the cells, and act in a similar way. So they actually have a balancing effect. So if our estrogen levels are too high, what phytoestrogens will do will actually take up the space of the natural estrogen. So kind of lower our estrogen levels. If they're too low, then once again, they take up the space on our estrogen receptors and increase the impact or the effect of estrogen. So it very much has a balancing effect on the cells in the body. So sometimes it's beneficial when we've got too much estrogen and we need to clear more, or if we don't have enough, that we need a little bit more. And particularly in perimenopause, when estrogen levels can go up and down all of the time, and it's the roller coastering of hormones that I've spoken about before that tends to be what causes the symptoms. And we do know that soy has a great effect on reducing hot flushes, and this is because of the estrogen-like effect that it has on ourselves. So, do we do soy or do we not do soy? It does come down to the quality, and over the years there's been a lot of bad news around soy and saying everybody needs to be avoiding soy. But the thing is, soy in itself is not a problem. It's a bean, but we do process it a lot. And the biggest issue with soy is that a majority of soy that is produced in the world is genetically modified. And that's where we need to be very careful of our soy consumption. So, you know, there are Asian countries that, you know, soy forms part of their core dietary intake, but they're not having the processed soy that we in the Western world have. So soy in itself as a bean, edamame bean, or even fermented as tempeh or tofu is not an issue. It's the way we process it and what we're doing to the soy to get it into a form that we are consuming as food. So, you know, if you can get non-genetically modified soy, organic ideally, then having that type of a soy product is not as much of an issue than if you're just having the run-of-the-mill, you know, the vegan meats, the what's known as TVP, textured vegan or vegetarian protein, all very much soy based. And if you look at some of these artificial meats and have a look at it and see that there's soy in it, and you also find there's a whole pile of other chemicals in it, that needs to be avoided, because pretty good chance that the soy that's being used is genetically modified, because as I said, the majority of the soy that is grown in the world is genetically modified, and then there's all the rest of the chemicals that are added as well. But you know, if you're just having some soybeans or some edamame beans, that's not a big issue. So what are the benefits of soy, particularly as you're coming through this menopause transition? As I mentioned, the phytoestrogen effect, or the soy contains what is known as isoflavones, and these are a specific class of phytoestrogen, and they just help to balance up estrogen, particularly as your estrogen levels are coming down. So that's where soy has been shown to reduce symptoms such as hot flashes. So that's just the phytoestrogen effect, which I've already spoken about last week's episode and just a little while ago. There's also evidence showing that soy isoflavones may actually help in maintaining bone density in women, postmenopausal women, and which reduces the risk of osteoporosis. So we do know that as women come through this stage of life, that the risk of osteoporosis does increase as your estrogen levels come down. So there's some evidence, research evidence showing that soy may actually help to reduce that risk. Also, soy has been linked to slight improvement in cholesterol levels. It's not unusual for women as they come through the menopause transition that their cholesterol levels do come up a little bit. And I'm going to do a separate podcast on kind of why that happens. But we know that soy does actually, there's research that's showing that it can actually improve cholesterol levels, and which means then there's likely that there could be a benefit or decreased risk in heart disease. So there is there's a little bit of research around about the role of soy in reducing the risk of heart disease. And I've already mentioned the it can reduce the frequency and severity of hot flashes, night sweats, and other common symptoms of menopause. But soy doesn't come without its risks, just because of the impact that it does have on our cells. If you have thyroid conditions, these soy isoflavones do have the potential to interfere with the functioning of the thyroid gland, particularly if you already have been diagnosed with a thyroid condition. So it's very important that if you do have a thyroid condition, that if you are going to have soy on a regular basis, that your thyroid function is monitored. You know, it's a little bit controversial whether or not women should be taking the soy when they have a thyroid condition. And a few years ago, I do remember that there was a particular brand of soy milk that was around, which was actually impacting women's thyroid when they were consuming this particular brand. But I do believe there was another additive within that milk, which was also causing an issue as well. But we just need to be aware that you know, if you do have a thyroid issue, that you do have just to be a little bit careful, and it's about not over consuming. And this, I think, is part of the thing that we need to be looking at, because what happened in the past, we used to have lots of dairy, and then there was a scare on dairy. So then everyone replaced dairy with soy. So everything had soy in it. And so then we over consumed on soy. And then from there, then there was a scare on soy. So then we went into almond milk, and then plant-based milks and oat milks and things like that. I think we need to be just very careful about the amount that we're consuming of any of these dairy products or milk-like products. Is when we're over-consuming them, there's always an issue. And if we do know that there's, you know, underlying health concerns, we just need to be very careful of that. So if you do know you've got a thyroid condition, you know, having a soy coffee, you know, once every so often is probably not an issue. But if you're consuming, you know, you're having one to two cups of coffee based on, a whole mug of soy milk, plus you're having soy cheese or soy proteins elsewhere, then, you know, with lots of soy added, then you need to be concerned. But if you're only having a, you know, a soy latte once every, you know, once or twice a week, it's probably not an issue for you. But we also need to, as I said, we need to look at the quality and where that soy is coming from. So it is the processed foods more than anything that we need to be concerned about, not soy that's in its natural form as the bean, or tempeh, which is a fermented food, or tofu, which is kind of half fermented. But, you know, when they're more naturally produced foods, then that there's not the issue there. It's when it's used as processed. And I mentioned that many of the vegan meats, or the TVP, the Texas protein, is very high in this manufactured processed soy. And we do need to be careful here. And also, soy is quite often used as a filler in foods that are labeled vegan or so-called healthy food. So it is about reading the ingredients. What are the ingredients saying? If it does say that there's soy in there, you just need to be very careful. And, you know, sometimes when we look at the ingredients on some of these, you know, so-called healthy foods, these alternative foods, these meats and things like that, you know, you look at what it's made of, and you have to think, it's like, really, if it's going to look and taste and smell like meat or chicken, then there's got to be some type of processing that's going on. If it's going to go from a plant to looking like an animal protein, there is processing going on. And, you know, it can be, you know, what we would call a chemical shit show. So just be really, really careful about what is actually included and where soy is being used as a filler. Soy is, it's a cheap ingredient. It's easy to grow, particularly genetically modified. So it is used in lots of processed foods to fill, used as an emulsifier as well. And you will see, read the labels, and it says soy emulsifier. Or other ingredients that say soy, and they're just fillers because they are cheap and they're really easy to use. There is a bit of a risk, and, you know, how much of this is a real risk or a perceived risk is something, you know, each individual needs to have a look at, because for a long time, particularly with this estrogen-like effect, this phytoestrogen, the isoflavane, women, particularly with breast cancer, were told to avoid all soy. But now there is now studies saying, well, soy might actually have a protective effect against these estrogen-based cancers as well. So it is a bit of a debate, and it probably does depend on who you're talking to, who your doctor is, as to whether or not they're going to recommend that you have soy or not have soy. But I do recommend that you do some research, have a look at the form, as I said, the form, the quality, the quantity of soy that you might be consuming. And if we're talking soy beans, you know, in its natural form, and you're not having very much, or a little bit of tempeh, a little bit of tofu, it's probably not going to be a big issue. But if you're having these processed foods, then it is. But then also need to look at the genetic differences, because we all metabolize foods differently. And soy is one of these foods. And as I said earlier, the Asian population have soy as a very, it's a basics of their diet, and they don't have a higher risk of these cancers and other health disease, because genetically, that they're able to metabolize soy better than, say, people who come from, you know, Northern Europe or, you know, the islands and things like that. So we need to be looking at the genetic differences as well. And this is a lot of the work that I do, is like, what is the right food that's right for you based on your genetics and based on your health history? Soy also can cause bloating and gas for some people as well. And once again, that comes down to genetics, but it also comes down to how well your gut works, you know, because beans are high in fiber. And if you've got a gut that's not working properly and you've got an imbalance in certain bacteria, gut bacteria, then that can actually then cause bloating if you start eating a higher quantity of soy that you weren't eating before. when it comes to nutrition, soy is actually a great source of protein. It's what we call a complete protein. So proteins are made up of building blocks known as amino acids. And the animal products all have complete protein. So they have all of what we call the essential amino acids. Essential amino acids are amino acids that we must get from our diet because our body can't produce them. Non-essential ones our body can produce from different nutrition. But animal proteins are what we call a complete protein. It has all of the essential amino acids. When it comes to plant-based proteins, only soy has the same profile as, say, red meat when it comes to the amino acid profile. So soy does is a complete profile. It does have all of the amino acids. It is one of the reasons why nutritionally it is a good alternative to having animal products, but we just need to be looking at how we're using that, whether or not we have, or how highly processing we are doing, we are going with that soy. So it is very high in nutrition. Apart from the amino acids, it's high in fiber, it's got lots of vitamins, lots of minerals. So it's really great for our health when it comes in a non-genetically modified form, ideally organic. So is soy good for you? Well, that's going to depend on your health history. It's going to depend on your genetics. It depends on the form of soy that you are consuming. So yes, it's good for you. Yes, but there's a lot of buts there, and you need to be looking at the entire picture before you say, oh, soy is a great option for me when it comes to getting good quality protein into my diet. Now, this talking about what's right for a particular person and how genetics works is a lot of the work that I do with the women that join my Embrace program. Now, I'm going to be talking about this in an upcoming free workshop that I have called The Secret to Thriving in Menopause Without HRT. So in this workshop, I'm going to be going into the role that your genes play in metabolizing certain foods, in metabolizing your hormones, how genetics play a big role in how you're going to transition through your menopause change of life. We we know that not everybody goes through menopause the same way. Some have really severe symptoms, and some have none, and the rest are kind of sitting in the middle. Some put on weight and some don't. So what is the differences? Why are some people really, really struggling and some aren't? Now, yes, your health plays a role, your food intake plays a role, the way that you move your body plays a role, your stress ball, that all plays a role, but so does your genetics. And when you can understand your genetic makeup, your particular genetic blueprint, you are then able to make better choices around the food that you eat, around the type of exercise that you do, the timing of when you eat, whether or not you need to be eating five times a day or you're okay with, two times a day, how you to manage stress, the best way to manage stress. When you understand your genetic profile, because the answers to all of that sits within your genetic profile, how your genes work, how they influence your hormones, how they influence your digestion, how they influence your immune system, how they influence the way your brain works. It all, it all comes together, and that's what I am sharing in this free workshop. So it is called The Secret to Thriving in Menopause Without HRT. We kick off on the 20th of May. Now, if you want to join us, then please visit bit.ly/menopause_workshop. So bit.ly/menopause_workshop. bit.ly/menopause_workshop. Now I'll put those links and everything in the show notes, but pop over there, register, it's completely free. And as I said, kicks off on May 20th, and I'll be going into in a lot more detail how you can work out, what foods are right for you, what type of eating plan, whether it's intermittent fasting or eating 5 times a day, carbs, proteins, vegetarian, whatever, I'm going to share with you how you can work that out for yourself. So that's it from me this week. I'll be back next week with another episode of the Menopause Conversations podcast. Now, I want as many women as possible to start learning more about what's happening to their body as they come through this time of life. So please feel free to share this episode or any other episode with your friends, you know, whether on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcasting platform you happen to be on. Please show them, if they're not used to listening to podcasts, show them how they can listen to this podcast. And if you're enjoying listening to these different episodes, please leave a rating and review over on whichever podcasting platform you're using. Apple Podcasts is the largest one, so if you can leave a rating and review over there, that would be great. But you do need an i device to do that. But if not, just let us know either on the website or wherever you're listening to this podcast, what you're enjoying, and if there's any topics that you would like me to. So that's it from me, and I will see you. I will speak to you, probably won't see you, next week on the next episode of Menopause Conversations. Bye for now.